This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I am a lucky guy.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Some guy walks up to me in a Buccaneers jacket in the middle of Munich. He says to me, "Aren't you Susie Schuster's husband?"
No.
Why, yes.
Today's guest, director of HBO Shaq, Robert Alexander, Alabama linebacker Will Anderson, Tennessee wide receiver Jalen Hyatt, from Netflix's Wednesday, actor Luis Guzman. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Alabama's Will Anderson, who could wind up being the number one overall draft choice in next year's NFL draft. He's slated to join us on this program in this hour. I've been told he might be a little late, that he's taking a test.
Oh.
How about that?
Wow.
Education first.
I don't know. I'm assuming it is an academic
student thing. Athlete.
We'll find out.
Oh.
Jalen Hyatt of Tennessee football. He's joining us in hour number three. And the actor Luis Guzman will be in the guest chair, currently occupied by our guest to kick off hour number two here on the Rich Eisen Show on the Roku channel and this terrestrial radio station, Sirius XM Odyssey, and more. The HBO sports documentary Shaq, a four-part documentary series, premieres with the first episode next Wednesday, November 23rd at 9 Eastern time on HBO. Available to stream on HBO Max. New episodes air every single Wednesday. The man who directed this docuseries, as well as a director of a handful of episodes of The Shop on HBO, Robert Alexander, here in studio. Good to see you, sir.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
How'd you get hooked up with this project?
Combination of things, but really HBO connected me, and I have a phenomenal relationship over there, and they asked me if I wanted to work on the project, and then it was my job to put together creative that was worthy of Shaq's attention, for him to agree to be involved, and to sit for all I needed to sit for, to build a series, and that's how we did it.
And the creative that you came up with is?
Yeah, I mean, it's a... I'm really excited. I'm really excited for people to see it. It's a really, really fresh approach. I don't think I'm proud to say I don't think I've ever seen a sports doc or a lot of docs in the space that's ever looked like this before. The first film, we took inspiration from old monster movies, so there's kind of this feel to it. The second one is inspired by superhero stories and comic book origin stories.
That's a very Shaq thing.
Yeah, it's very Shaq thing. So it's kind of the rise of Shaq, which is really cool. So there's literally like comic book elements that run throughout the entire film.
Yes.
The third one's just a little bit more moody, a little bit about his tension in LA and his journey during that time. And so that one kind of has this like film noir feel to it.
Oh.
And the fourth one is inspired a lot in the Shaq is this element that exists in so many different spaces and social, obviously commercial television, film, everywhere. So the fourth film is it's inspired by a lot of different mediums. So there's like social media elements to it, film elements to it, television elements to it that are really cool. So,
oh my goodness gracious. And did you get Shaq to agree to it because you said you would not talk about Kazam at all?
That was in the contract.
That's
one of the things we had to lock off on.
Yeah, I'm just having some fun.
Yeah,
because
he
is just a larger than life individual. And I don't mean because of his size.
Yes.
I'm just talking about just how giving he is, how big hearted he is, how funny he is. And I'll never forget this. When we were at the Super Bowl in Atlanta a few years ago on our show, and he was one of our guests.
Yeah.
And he walked in and we had, the set was built and it was a much smaller door than he would fit through. You remember this, how he walked down the set? Stock. He walked down the set, and I think this is a stock thing for him, where he slapped the top of the doorway and acted like he banged his head.
Right, yeah.
And the whole crowd, because it was a live studio audience, was like, whoa, are you okay?
Yeah.
And that was just like his gag way of entering.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that's something he probably does pretty much everywhere he walks in.
He's so spectacular playing to every room exactly as he needs to.
Right.
It seems to be like an entirely unique interaction he has with every space he's in.
Right.
And it's like he can sense it's, because, you know, I'm lucky enough to make films and television, work on a lot of different projects. And sometimes you just interact with these people who are just aliens. And they're just so unique on how they interact with the world and the people that are there. And to know it's like, this is the best thing I can do in this space.
Right.
And Shaq is one of the most unique people in the world.
What'd you learn about him that you didn't already know? Because I imagine you came to this project fully knowledgeable of his
world. As a fan,
world.
For sure, as right. a kid who grew up loving Shaq, loving Kobe, I think that I learned that Shaq is exactly on camera the mm-hmm. way he is off camera. He is one of the most genuine individuals I've ever interacted with.
Yes.
I think something else that's great about him is that he loves joy into like such a high level that he just always wants to find a positive space, not only for himself, but everyone he's around, which is yes. great. And I think he's, and on the total flip side, he's ruthless when it comes to business and his money and what he wants to achieve mm-hmm. and what he wants his legacy and what his name to mean. I think he's like, he will not take any hesitation, no questions asked. This is what I am. This is what I'm going to represent. So
yeah, that's a word I don't think I've ever heard ascribed to Shaquille is ruthless, you know, when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Did you witness that yourself? Did you see anything
like
that?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, as we got deeper into talking about how he approaches business, how he approached his basketball career.
Yes.
There's no reservations. There's no hesitation. Mm-hmm. I decide I want to be known as this level of dominance. I decide I want to earn this type of money.
Yes.
I decide that I want the name Shaq to resonate beyond just the basketball court. I want to be a brand. I want to be a presence that the world will know. And I will not take anything other than that. And he was so definitive of that. Mm-hmm. And it was exciting to see because he was also able to do that, I think, understanding his just natural exuberance and power of humor and joy. So he has this incredibly intelligent way of weaving it all together.
Well, I mean, and so are you the one, by the way, the director, Robert Alexander of HBO's Shaq, a four-part documentary series is here on the Rich Eisen Show in studio. Are you the one who asked him the questions? Did you sit down?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long did you sit him down for? How long did you get him sat?
I think we did three or four days, and usually, you know, it's always about energy level, and obviously people get a little drained after a while. And
right.
It's my job to not only keep him engaged, but also know when it's like, okay, he's wavering for the day.
Yes.
So I think it's between 2 and 4 hours every time we sat down. So he was great. He was great. I mean, there's moments when he's like, I'm done, you know?
Sure.
Which is fine, and you respect that.
You do.
Yeah.
Did you interview most everyone?
Everybody.
I mean, you did, yourself.
Everybody, yeah.
Penny Hardaway, Dwayne Wade, Dennis Scott, Brian Shaw, Derek Fisher, Rick Fox. You sat down both Riley and Phil,
Yeah. Pat Riley was in Miami, and Phil was somewhere in upstate California. It was great. Everyone's mm-hmm. great. And, you know, these things are very unique. Everyone has a different personality and presence.
Right.
Perspective. Everyone has ego. And just finding ways to navigate that, you know, as we kind of journey through the story of Shaq, because I have my own perspective from interacting with him, interacting with his mother, talking about his family, talking with his family, talking with his teammates, things I've read about him, learned about him. So then it's just kind of finding a way to be safe in understanding that. But I'm open to, you know, these perspectives that I'm getting that are so unique for this.
How much Kobe are we going to get in this?
I think there's a really strong amount of Kobe. I think that when we got to, there's two sides to it.
Yes.
One is that me and Shaq had a pretty honest conversation about Kobe not being with us anymore, feeling like what he went through with Kobe was, in one instance, what he felt personally and what their interaction was and what their relationship. And then there's this whole world of how the outside world told their story and how they utilized both Shaq and Kobe, utilized the media to shape narratives, you know? But Shaq made it very clear to me, he's like, Kobe's not with us anymore, and this is 20 years ago, and there's a lot more to not only our relationship, but my experience as a basketball player that I want to make sure has weight. And then me as a filmmaker, it was also important for me to say, I approach this as honest as possible. So I have perspective as a writer and a creator to say, there's certain things I want to tell about this story. And over the course of making a film, it shifts, you know, sometimes rather aggressively where, oh, I thought it was more extreme than this in some places where it was and where it wasn't. So my job was to meet kind of a middle ground with that. But to be transparent, we also got to a point where we had a certain amount of their story in the film. Kobe's family essentially requested that we reduce the amount of Kobe we have in the film.
Why?
I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
But out of respect for their wishes, we did it. We went ahead and we complied. I think that it's important that, you know, when I come into a project like this, there's only so much I know. And even though I spend a lot of time with Shaq, there's, you know, there's his entire life I've haven't had this interaction with him. So when I come into these projects and then I spend a year turning it into a film, there's certain things I may say is important for me as a filmmaker, but I'm dealing with humans. I'm dealing with people who have a lot of history and feelings and emotions and perspective that I don't understand. So it's my job just to respect that. So I'm very proud with what we ended up with as far as our the amount of Kobe content that we have that relates to Shaq's story. But at the end of the day, it's a Shaq film that I'm
sure,
making.
Of course. But I mean, what an important part of the,
it's a very important
the Shaq
part. Yeah.
Career
yeah.
here in LA.
Yeah.
I mean, the number of times, I mean, I was on the SportsCenter set when this is going down.
Yeah.
My wife was covering the team.
Yeah.
And she adores Shaq.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, he's one of her favorites.
Yeah.
And I just remember when, you know, because, you know, I was on SportsCenter at the time.
Yeah.
He knew who I was. And when I got engaged, we got engaged.
Yeah.
My wife and I, he saw the ring and he would just comment about the ring and how, you know, and it just, he was just always part and parcel of the fun, the joy and the interesting level. But to have a front, the story she would tell about Shaq and Kobe, I mean, that was it.
Yeah.
Phil,
yeah.
Shaq, Kobe.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For a long time.
Right.
I mean,
they played together for 8 years, you know, and there was some pretty vocal stuff about kind of their tension.
Afterwards as well.
For a long part of that. And then afterwards as well. So, and we cover it. There's a lot that we talk about that I felt was sufficient because the most important thing for me in the amount of Kobe that is in this film is that we never diminish his impact, because for me, he was such a important role, not only just watching and loving basketball as just a fan, but just his impact and his skill level as one of our, you know, most amazing performers ever. So when we had conversations about reducing him from the series, the most important thing for me was that we never lost the weight of his impact and contribution to their success.
All right. And just one last thing on the subject matter. I mean, was that an awkward conversation when you heard about from the Bryant family to say, you know, diminish his?
It was, you know, it was dealt in a lot of different areas.
Sure.
You know, some conversations I was involved in, some conversations I weren't involved when I, for the most part, experienced it from a relative distance as you look at, you know, lawyers and agents and that sort of thing.
Yes.
But I don't think it was a difficult, like as a filmmaker, you get excited about certain things because you want to tell a story to a certain scale and depth.
Yes.
And I'm not about kind of sugarcoating, or I'm not about kind of fluff or things that feel forced in any way. That's just not how I approach what I do. And so for me, it was, I just need to make sure that there's so many people who work so hard to make this project come to life that it feels worthy of the moment and the characters that are involved. So for me, the most important thing was, because sometimes that's just the reality, right?
Yes.
You were excited about something. Oh, that's just not going to happen. Well, so it's not your job to just say, well, we just can't make anything and we just throw it away.
Sure.
It's like, this is the box now that I'm allowed to be free within, and I just have to find a different way to make this come to life.
Robert Alexander, the director of HBO's Shaq, a four-part documentary series that premieres next week on HBO next Wednesday, and all episodes after that air on Wednesdays here on The Rich Eisen Show. You've also directed a handful of episodes of The Shop, right?
Yeah, for 5 years. I mean, I think all of them.
Okay.
Maybe one or two.
So
yeah.
Let me just hit you on a couple subject matters. Did you direct the episode with Tom Brady?
Yes, I did.
So do you know who the MF-er is? You do know who it is.
Oh, he does.
I think Tom is phenomenal in front of a camera, and he knows what to say and not to say. So I can't really speculate on that to any degree. I think that he chose to present that information that way.
Understood.
And so I think that's something.
Now, when you're a director and you've got your headphones on, you hear that, you're like, jackpot, right? I mean, like, that's
more or less. I mean, yeah.
But there was no like quiet. Again, I don't mean to you know, put you on the spot, even though it appears that I am.
Yeah.
But like, was there at a quiet moment, like anybody, like did LeBron lean over to him and go, all right, tell me who it is?
No, I don't think so. I don't think anything happened in that moment. You know, I think we were more, I mean, that's such a unique show. There's a lot of different people on, and it's, you know, it's my job to help support, to kind of navigate our conversation, where we go and what we want to hit and that sort of thing. But
yes.
I think in that moment, that's a great thing about when LeBron, I think, it does interact with, you know, his peers on that level.
Yeah, goat on goat.
Like, yeah, right. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, like, I think it's more about, I know what it's like to be disrespected at who I know I am and my quality level and my skill level. So I think sometimes when those interactions take place, I'm excited. I want to dig deep on that.
And look, Robert, I've been doing this now for 8+ years, and it is my job to have a conversation with somebody and make them feel comfortable so they will share information that they can feel like it's just a conversation, that they don't know that there's a camera on and everyone's listening.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's the beauty of the shop. You could see that has been created. Not just
really
with your set, but obviously when LeBron is talking and then everyone else who's there, you could sense that. And so you sort of get that fly on the wall feeling as you're sitting at home.
Yeah.
So you've, you know, check all those boxes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe that's what led Brady to say that. But deep down, you know who the MF-er is.
I have my perspective. I'm sure others do.
Would you care to share what your perspective is?
You know, I'd say no, because I feel like, to your point about how hard we work on that show to make it feel this organic and free and expressive.
Yes.
It's a lot of, you know,
safe space.
Respect.
Understood.
It's a safe space I take a lot of pride in holding to that.
Good
that
answer.
Standard. Yeah.
Good answer. But deep down,
trouble.
Though, you do
stay,
have your own two cents on who the MF is.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And Ryan Tannehill.
No. Don't even go that. Don't do that to him. I've already pride enough.
Yeah.
Were you the director on the Kanye episode as
well? Yes, I was. That was a really tough day. And I am really proud of, you know, Maverick, who leads the shop, and LeBron and team for how we chose to approach that after the fact. That was a really tough day. It was not what we encourage on that show in that space. And I think the right decision was made to not put that out in the world. There's a lot of ugly things in the world, period. We don't need more. But it wasn't what it should have been, for sure.
You huddled up? Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was a conversation.
You could share?
I mean, obviously there were conversations we had on the day. And then obviously Maverick, who, you know, obviously leads Spring Hill, and his team, you know, got together and made some decisions, and we communicated about it. And we went in the direction of as best to, you know, not try to salvage this and put it out in the world. Which I 100% agree with, and I'm really proud of us to make that decision, because you could get to a place where you try to, you know, people are going to want to click on it, right? So we can make the decision to not use this, but use this, and not use this, and not use it. But you get to a certain point where it's like, then are you still encouraging that someone can speak a certain way and express themselves in a certain way that is really hurtful and negative, and then get to a place where it's okay, because we'll work it out for you. You know, we'll make it salvageable. We'll make it worthy to air.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that's the place we want to be.
So you supported that as the director?
Yeah, absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
Was LeBron on the set
He was not there on that day.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must have been.
It was a lot.
Something else.
A lot. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. It was a lot, you know, personally. You know, me as an artist and a filmmaker, there's a handful of people that I think without their inspiration, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing in this space right now. And honestly, you know, he was a big hero of mine. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about where I am now on that. But I know that on that particular day and the interactions that we all had was really difficult. You know, literally we had the premiere for Shaq 2 days ago in Atlanta, and I had to make a speech. And the number one thing I was really excited to share is that I don't share this when we're directing, but, and I'm working with the talent, but Shaq was a humongous hero for me. And they always say, don't meet your heroes. Right.
Right.
And he was one that I met, and I was so proud. He exceeded all my expectations.
You couldn't say anything more about Shaq.
Yeah.
More accurate
Absolutely.
Than
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And that does actually nail it.
Yeah.
about him.
Yeah,
he really is just aces.
Yeah, he really is.
He's just, and I just love the videos of him when he strolls out of a restaurant. Yeah. And he sees somebody like wearing his his jersey, and he like surprises them.
Yeah,
and he's literally like. And sometimes you think in this day and age of social media, is it staged? Sure. Like, not with him. Sure. Ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ever. And he's so like great at what he does with Kenny and and Charles and Ernie. Did you speak to them too for this as well?
Ernie was in. Okay. We couldn't make the schedule work for Charles and Kenny, but Ernie was in the film, and a great part too.
He's good people.
Yeah, really good people. So.
Hey, Robert, I'm looking forward for everybody to see this. I think it's neat how you've come up with a different way. Sure. And certainly the superhero one, I think probably speaks to Shaq very well.
It's going to be really fun.
I look forward to that. A four-part documentary series that premieres next Wednesday, November 23rd at 9 Eastern on HBO, and then available to stream on HBO Max every single Wednesday after that. Yeah. Come back for your next project,
cool.
sir.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, and I don't know, do you have bald people on the shop? I mean, or does that immediately disqualify them? Because
usually we ask them not to come.
I get it.
Yeah, hat options. You know, we're open.
Understood. I get it. Understood. But just tell Mav. You know, I'll grow it out. Just for that episode.
Sure. Okay.
Robert Alexander here on the Rich Eisen Show. Willie Anderson of Alabama still to come on this program.
The World Tournament of Soccer kicks off next week in Qatar, and to make sure you're up to speed, we present Qatar Kick Around. All this week, the Kick Around guys are providing a primer of episodes for those watching their very first World Tournament or anybody who just wants to learn more. And group previews all the way from A through H and predicting how they'll turn out. Will the U.S. even get out of their group? Will we get a surprise first-time winner? Or will we get the storybook ending of Messi finally lifting the trophy? Andy, Peter, and Lars are your soccer friends from the group stage to the final, all available at thekickaround.com or wherever you listen.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
When you open a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van, folks, you are opening more than just doors. You're unlocking potential, the potential to do your own thing and be your own boss and steer your own success and blaze your own trail. Each and every Sprinter van is built, designed, and equipped to let you hit the open road and take on any goal you set to help you follow your own passions, reawaken that spirit adventure, and check all those big, bold, fun, and exciting experiences off your bucket list. Owning a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van lets you live, work, and play out your dreams, no matter how far off the beaten path they'll take you. And with 16 body types, your choice of a gas or diesel engine, thousands of ways to customize, and now available in an all-wheel drive, a Sprinter van is capable and versatile enough to help you drive your ambitions wherever you want to take them. So now's the time to discover what it is that moves you most. Don't wait. Unlock your potential inside a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter. Will Anderson of Alabama slated to join us shortly. He's a still waiting to hear from him when he might call in. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We're going to take your phone calls in a second. If you're just joining us, we just said goodbye to Robert Alexander, the director of the new Shaq documentary that's on HBO. Eager to see it. He's also the director of a handful of episodes of The Shop, including the one that Tom Brady mentioned how he couldn't believe a team that he was, I guess, thinking about joining in his free agency year of 2020. Told him that they were going to stick with their current quarterback. And he said, you really are going to stick with that MF-er? And we have literally been trying for a while to identify who that MF-er is. And the latest...
A lot of names.
The latest, sleuthing occurred when the Dolphins were busted for tampering with Tom Brady. And one would think, everyone's like, it's got to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. But that makes no sense, because if they were tampering with Tom Brady, wouldn't they have been more than willing to jettison Ryan Fitzpatrick and anything else Someone's like, it's got to be Ryan Fitzpatrick if they're thinking of tampering with Brady.
That was the first idea.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Right.
And then we found out from Dana White at Gronk. Dana White, Dana White just said, hey, I had brokered you and Brady to come to Vegas. And Gruden wasn't into it. So it must have been Derek Carr, right?
Yeah, that's a thought.
I mean, that's another thought. But this man must know who just left the studio. He was there. He says he has his own theories. And I must tell you, everybody at the Rich Eisen Show listening audience or television viewing audience at the wherever you are, we just, I believe, all of us collectively just showed the most resolve we've ever shown with a guest leaving here. And we've had much resolve broken. I mean, the number of times that Del Tufo just jumps out, wants to take a selfie, please sign this, please sign that.
Hey, Kevin Bacon.
And it's much to the help of our program. I mean, one of my favorite items that's viewed in front of Mike Del Tufo's position is the old school cell phone that he had Michael Douglas sign. And that'll be interesting to bring up Michael Douglas's name when the man who's playing opposite his wife, Luis Guzman, comes into this studio in hour number three. But I'll just say this. We did not ask him as he's leaving. Okay, now you could tell us who's the MFR.
Right. I meant to. MFR. I just forgot.
We didn't do it.
We didn't
I'm very
it.
Proud of us.
We didn't do it.
Very
I'm disappointed, to be honest.
Very proud of us.
Is he still there?
Come on, maybe tell us. Catch him come on, quick. Tell us.
Yeah, Liz.
No. I think he's gone. Quick. I think he's out.
Now, I'm not happy that we didn't do that.
What's our final best guess?
By the way, Brockman.
How is it not?
Chris.
Derek Carr?
How is it not him? If Dana White said he had this brokered.
Well, do we believe Dana White, I guess, is what it comes down to?
Gronk was the one who confirmed it.
Yeah.
Gronk did confirm it.
I mean, yeah.
Chris, here's the deal, though. Rich failed twice when he was in Munich. One, he had Tom Brady interviewed with him in a room.
Oh, good point.
Brought him in for a hug.
Who's the
MF-er? Didn't say it was from you.
I didn't bring him in for a hug.
You could have brought him in close to him and been like, Tommy, who's the MF-er?
Who's the MF-er?
No one else would have heard, and he would have went back and said.
Like a little whisper thing, you know what I mean?
You know, so this is on you. You could have broke. I mean, I guess you're not an investigative journalist anymore. You know, that's when you were hungry and younger.
Anymore.
You know, you would have broke that case, Rich.
I haven't even told you I saw Brady later that night, too, out and about.
Oh, wait a second. Now you're burying the lead.
And I didn't do that there either.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You was out in the club?
Not in the club. In a restaurant.
Oh. You saw at the same restaurant as Tom Brady?
Yes, I did.
Were you at the same table?
Did you go up to him?
I did.
And what'd you say?
Nothing of this sort.
Did you shake his hand there?
I did.
Did you give him a little,
a little dap?
What up?
A little dap.
And you still didn't say anything? That ain't
After
your
all
man.
I've done for you.
That ain't your man, Brockman. You thought that was your man.
I am your man. I am your man, and I have what's called standards.
Wait,
I'm not going to
Not when you've had a few, you know.
Yeah. You blew it!
And you're at a restaurant.
No. Well, also, he has standards, Brockman. His standards are so high that when inside of a crowded restaurant, he will slide his chair back to almost trip one of the greatest, if not the great,
Martin
American
Scorsese.
Storytellers, filmmakers of all time.
You got a Lady Gaga shot?
I don't know if I'm ever going to meet Tom.
Here's the thing.
And give him a hug.
Here's the thing.
Because he's brought you so
are
much.
Are you really saying to me?
Yes.
Or are you just doing a bit here?
No, he's serious.
Really wants to hug
No. We need to now cut down to the bone here. Are you really saying to me, I should have told Tom, I want to hug you for one of my guys who's a diehard Patriot fan? You made him so happy. He for wants so me to hug you. Is that okay? Like you literally.
He doesn't know.
How does one go about that?
You just did it.
I don't know if Tom's ever going to come in here, right? And if I see Tom out in the wild, I can't just...
How do you know he'll never come in here?
I can't just bear hug him in the wild. Like, if I see him at, the 3rd Street Promenade or something, he's probably got security.
Once, you once accosted Nomar on a plane.
Nomar.
And your opening line was, you share the same birthday.
Well, we do. That's a fact.
Fact. We do share the same
How'd
birthday.
How'd it go for you?
It didn't go great. I mean, he did wish me a happy birthday. He did say, happy belated birthday.
And you wanted me to use any time with Brady...
No.
To go up and ask him who the MF-er is.
You saw him a second time.
A second time.
I did.
At night, when the drinks
at
were
night,
flowing.
Correct. When the flowing.
Off the clock.
Not for him. They were not flowing for him.
They were flowing for you, which you would have been
they absolutely were.
Yeah, and so it was a little more loose to just freely ask questions.
Definitely.
wow, I can't believe you, A, didn't tell us that on the spot. Like,
why would
hey,
I?
I'm at dinner
why
with Brady.
You? Is a better question.
You know what? Like, you sometimes you got to ask me questions to get it out of me.
Since when?
Wow. That's messed up.
Right?
Actually, it's not. At all. Evan in Cortland, New York. You're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Evan?
Hey, what's going on, Rich?
How are you, sir?
Can you hear me okay? I'm actually at my gym right now.
Oh, look at you. So hold on.
Well done.
Evan, so you want to, are you asking to work into this show right now? Is that what you're doing?
Oh,
are we spotting you right now? Are we spotting? Okay, you want to work in?
We could do a group cardio exercise right now.
You're working into our rotation. All right, so are you in Cortland, New York? You're in a gym.
Yeah.
And you decided, you know what, I need to call Rich's show in the middle of my workout. Literally, this is what's happening.
Well, actually, Rich, here's a little funny tidbit. So you as a Jets fan will probably appreciate this.
Okay.
So Cortland, I'm actually going to SUNY Cortland
attaboy.
Right now.
Okay.
Do you know who used to practice here?
SUNY Cortland. The Jets did, right, back in the day?
The Jets did, yes. Yeah. It's actually where they filmed the Hard Knocks episode.
There you go. That's where they got a GD snack.
So they took all the equipment out, and now our gym is their old training facility. So it's pretty cool.
Look at us.
Look at us. Look at that.
Okay. What's on your mind that you're busting up your workout to call?
Anyway, so here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I'll get into it because I know you guys are very busy. So what I'm seeing out of the Colts right now with Jeff Saturday, it reminds me of what the Giants were trying to do with Joe Judge. Now, I know Joe Judge did have a little bit of coaching experience, not like the kind of coaching experience you'd want, but he did have some. And what he did was, you know what, I'm just going to let the coordinators do what they have to do, let them implement the game plan, and I'm just going to go ahead, focus on clock management in the locker room. Now, he did that poorly, as everybody in that room knows, that was a terrible job. Jeff Saturday, on the other hand, he knows how to lead in that. You hear Jim Irsay talk about he was the voice in that locker room. And that speaks volumes to me. If you're the voice in the locker room as a center, not your quarterback, as a center, that means that you're able to galvanize your men on the offensive line to fight for everybody. And I really like what I saw. I really like the way he addressed the press. He doesn't give those, you know, corny little comments that Joe Judge used to make. You know, but he's also put the right guys in place for his staff. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I guess, you know, if you want to compare apples to apples, you know, I think they're serving the same role. You know, the issue is here, and I'm gonna you know, I'll push back a little bit here. You know, Judge wasn't a former player that's coming in and basically saying, you know, I know what it's like to be you guys, and follow me. You know, he's coming in saying, you know, whatever. I don't know what he told the team, but I think they just come from a different perspective. Sort of a difference between a Nautilus machine and whatever you're working out on now that used to be.
Free weights right now.
Attaboy. You go finish your workout, sir, Evan. And
have a good one.
Okay, you got it. That's Evan.
One of the coldest baseball games I ever played was in Cortland, New York. Whew. My hand still stung.
Is that the same thing as the coldest winter you ever spent was a summer in San Francisco?
Not quite, but close.
Okay. We're going to take a break. I believe Will Anderson is going to join us after the break. And if not, you know, what are we going to do?
Talk about stuff.
Talk about more stuff. Scold you more for not hugging Tom Brady.
Jalen Hyatt of Tennessee joining us in hour number three. And Luis Guzman, the actor, is joining. We have a great celebrity true or false for him as well. He's in the new Netflix show Tim Burton directed called Wednesday for the Addams Family. It's pretty cool stuff. Hour number three here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't go anywhere. Back with more in a moment. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We have, by the way, our next two guests were just announced as semifinalists for the Walter Camp Player of the Year Award.
Yeah, they are.
Jalen Hyatt of Tennessee is joining us in about 17 minutes time. And joining us now on the Rich Eisen Show Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line is the reigning, let me make sure I get this correct, the Bronco Nagurski Trophy winner of 2021. 17 and a half sacks last year. He is a grown-ass man that we're going to hear his name mentioned very quickly when we're doing the draft next year in Kansas City. Joining us from Alabama football is Will Anderson Jr. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing today?
I am doing just fine. When did you first realize that you could sack a quarterback well? When did that happen?
My 10th grade year in high school, my sophomore year, they had officially moved me to defensive end, and we had got a new defense coordinator. And I was telling him the position I wanted to play, and he was like, oh, no, you're going to go play defensive end, and you're going to go sack quarterbacks. And then ever since then, I just took off with it, and I loved it ever since.
Who did you – I mean, what were you playing before that? What position were you playing before that?
I wanted to play like fullback, running back, but I also was playing like a little bit of a middle linebacker, like sack back linebacker and stuff like that. The previous coaches had me playing that, but I really wanted to play offense, but they wasn't going for it.
So what about now? Have you informed the coaching staff there that you could do a little bit of offense too for your team?
Well, I think once they see me have a pick and, you know, go score a touchdown, mm-hmm. they said a few things. But, no, we got a lot of players on that side of the ball that handle that, you know, that area pretty well, better than I could. So I think we're good.
So when did Nick Saban first appear in front of you? When did you first meet him, Will Anderson?
It's crazy. I'll never forget. I first met him in January. I think it was right after their season, right after my football season. I came up here for junior day. And honestly, I wasn't thinking too much about it. It's really my mom. She's the reason why I'm even here at the University of Alabama, because I got like a little like text in my Twitter DM saying like, you know, you're invited. And I was like, Mom, you know, they do this to every player. You know, I don't think they're serious. I don't know how good I am to go to Alabama. I'm not sure. You know, just hearing all those things about Alabama, like
sure.
all the negativity. So I'm like, you know, I don't know. And then, you know, I'm there and it changed my whole mindset. I got a chance to talk to coach and I really see how much they like me. And it changed my whole, you know, view of Alabama.
Hmm. So, because you're from Georgia, right? Correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, yes, were you never on Georgia's radar screen, or you were, and you chose Alabama over Georgia? Is that what happened?
I guess you could say I was on the radar. They just never offered me a scholarship. Huh. You know, things go down like that. You know, it's all a business. You know how these things go down. But, you know, it was all good. You know, coming here, it's been great, and everything worked out exceptionally well for me here.
Mm-hmm.
I love it here, and I wouldn't rather be anywhere else.
So what do you say to anybody that's out there thinking Alabama's got a couple losses and they're toast? They should not be a college football playoff team this year. How do you respond to that, Will Anderson?
You know, we can't really get into all that stuff. You know, we just have to keep doing what we do on the field, keep going out there playing hard and show people that, you know, we are capable of being in the playoffs and we are a playoff team and that, you know, we have what it takes to be in the playoffs. We have a really good team. We have a really good group of guys that, you know, they always do things the right way. They work really hard. I think now just about cleaning up the mental areas and making sure that we're all on the same page.
Okay. Now, I heard a rumor, if you wouldn't mind confirming for me, Will Anderson, that you were tearing up spring practice so much that at times you were removed from the field because the offense could not do what it needed to do to practice because you were blowing things up. Is that true or false, Will?
It's a little true behind that, but, you know, those guys, they do a really good job.
No, I know.
You know,
but you were doing too good of a job yourself that they're just like, okay, we need to practice here. Is that that's what I heard.
So I think it's just, they were just trying to build that team chemistry, you know, on defense, you know, along the lines, we had a lot of guys coming back. And I think the chemistry was just there a little bit, you know,
sure.
more defense at that time. So, you know, that's how that worked.
No, it's okay. I mean, you know, I don't want to get you in trouble, but I just heard you were tearing things up. And it's just like, okay, that's enough. We see what you can do, Will. You know, that's what I heard. Okay. All right. Very good. How has Alabama improved your game? Saban, the staff there, improved your game or allowed you to do what you need to do, Will?
You know what I think? I think they really did a really good job of, you know, helping me better my craft and using what I already had within, you know, the defense and everything, allowing me to play how I wanted to play. They moved me around a lot of places. You know, I was playing anywhere between like a 3-technique, 4-eye, a 4-5, a Y-9, and I was dropping back in coverage. So it kind of made me more versatile, I would say that, because in high school, you know, I was just playing straight defensive end. So I can most definitely say they helped me become more versatile, you know, with dropping and, you know, playing a little bit more inside and things like that. And, you know, especially with my pass rush and stuff like that, helping me at the top of my rush and things like that. But just becoming a more versatile player, Alabama did an incredible job of helping me with that.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you a question I've asked, I've lost track, well over half a dozen Alabama players, including Tua, Mac Jones, and so on and so forth. I think I asked Bryce Young this too. What's the most pissed off you've ever personally made Nick Saban? Do you got that story for me, Will?
You know, I kind of always, I don't know.
Okay.
I've always kind of did things the right way. I've messed up a few times. He's never really just like yelled at me probably like that.
Is that good?
I let him knock on wood because I don't want it to happen no time soon. But
you're making it this far, is what you said. You've made it this far.
Just jinx.
Okay.
Look, I made it this far without getting a big two and out, so I'm gonna keep it like that. But I don't have a story for you because.
Everybody kind of tries to do things the right way, but they sometimes don't know. So have you also been on the business end of a BOFA joke from him? Has that happened from Nick Saban to you, Will?
Let me see. Nah.
Okay. All right. Look at you.
Wow.
Look at you. All right. So what is your goal for the future? What can you tell me about that? I have a feeling I'm going to see you in Indianapolis soon and then in Kansas City after that in 2023. I have that sense, Will. What about you for yourself?
Well, right now I'm focused on getting my degree. You know, I graduate in December 10th this year. I got my degree in 2.5 years, so that's one thing that I'm very excited about. And
awesome.
Looking forward to the future. So right now just my grades. And just becoming connecting with these younger guys, making sure that, you know, that they're good and, you know, helping some of the young guys that can become leaders next year, you know, showing them how to do things and, you know, trying to get tight with them to help them for next year and things like that.
Look at you.
That's kind of where I see stuff in my future right now.
What are you getting your degree in?
Communications and news media.
Oh, can I help in any way, shape, or form, Will? I mean, this is, you know, I can, what do you need? What do you got? What can I help with?
Give me a few pointers. I've been doing a pretty good job so far. So,
okay.
Know, any advice will help.
Pointers about what? Like you want to do like podcasts on air, that sort of stuff? Is that what you're talking about?
I want to do the sports broadcasting part of it. Like sit down and, you know, talk about sports and stuff like that. And,
okay.
You know what Shaq and them do.
Okay. I'm more than willing. Here's my advice for you, Will Anderson. Is you are your own fingerprint. There's only one Will Anderson Jr. There's only one of you. There's only one version of you that can deliver 2 cents on what it's like to rush a passer or not piss off your coach and win this award or be told, you know, you need to start rushing the passer and believing in yourself. Or the story that you told where you thought maybe Alabama wasn't the right spot for you and you learned eventually that it was. All of these stories, you know, you are the only version who can tell these stories and then, you know, take a look at what's going on in the sports world and use your perspective to deliver a story or information or interview somebody and your personality. Just you have to be yourself. The most successful people I've ever met in this business are people who are themselves on the air in front of the lights, in front of a microphone, and the same thing when they're not. So that's just a quick 2 cents. And never take no for an answer either from somebody.
Yes, sir.
How about that?
I got you. I appreciate that. I mean, that's going to stick with me. I'm going to most definitely use that when that time comes.
Free of charge. Right there. On the house. That's the RES Consulting, we call it. Rich Eisen Show Consulting right there. But seriously, I'm more than happy to be a resource in however you wish, and I'm sure I'll be seeing you down the line. For
yes,
sure.
Sir, will do.
Okay. Anything I need to know about Jalen Hyatt coming in? Now you'd probably have to cover him. A couple of weeks ago. Anything I need to know about him from Tennessee?
He's a great player. He's been doing a great job, and you know, okay. I'm excited to see his future.
Okay, very good. Look, you're first class, Will Anderson. I've heard nothing but great things about you, and I do look forward to seeing you at the next level when you're with your degree and everything else going on in your world.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks
again. Thank you for having me.
You got it. That's Will Anderson Jr. I heard that. he was going so full speed and being Will Anderson Jr. in some spring practices, they had to take him off the field so the offense could do its work.
Imagine that. Hey, you're too good. We're not getting any looks. Why don't you sit a few plays out?
That's what I heard.
That's wild.
And I think he kind of confirmed it by humbly not confirming it.
He did not deny it.
It's, okay. It's what I heard. That's how good he is.
There was like a, no.
You got the top 10, if you don't mind, Mr. Hoskins? Look, the top 10, I'm sorry, the draft order. I should have been more specific. Alabama currently 8. I think they're going to need some help. Texans have in the past, as we all know, gone pass rusher over the best offensive player
in the
draft.
That's true.
But that was back in the day.
They probably need a quarterback.
Raiders. You're saying the Panthers. That's what you're hearing?
You know, mock drafts, I'm seeing Carolina has taken him right now.
I'm hearing he could go number one. It doesn't matter about the quarterback. That's how good he is. This is what I'm hearing right now. And, of course, you know, the Texans could go Will Anderson 1, and then depending on how poorly Cleveland plays from here on out. By the way, Texans playing Cleveland in a couple weeks, as you know, that's Deshaun Watson's first game. Texans beating Cleveland
actually
worsens their own pick, but helps them on the pick they're getting from Cleveland.
That's great. That's hilarious.
So even if you lose, you win.
Right? Even when I lose, I win.
But they could go Anderson 1 and then take the quarterback later on since there's a ton of them.
Yeah.
Jalen Hyatt of Tennessee and Luis Guzman in studio coming up.
Even when you lose, I win.
There it is.
They could use that Browns pick and trade back up, get a little closer.
They could. They could get closer, and they could go 1-2 and take Bryce Young and Will Anderson.
C.J. Stroud.
I don't know. Has that ever happened? Same school, 1-2?
Same school, 1-2?
Did Penn State do that one?
That could have been, yes, 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 yes. Was it Kajana Carter?
Courtney Brown?
And Courtney Brown?
Maybe.
Not to the same team, though.
No. Courtney Brown did not wind up on the Jets.
That's what I'm saying.
Did the Jets really take Kajana Carter, number one overall? Did they do that?
No.
Or am I just blocking that out?
He was nice.
Bengals did. You guys took Blair Thomas.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, Blair Thomas.
Jeez. I'm jet lagged. Otherwise, I'd have known that.
Jet lagged. Yeah. No pun intended.
I'm blaming jet lag on everything now.
Jet.
Fair.
I can't think straight. I cannot believe I'm doing what I'm doing.
Well, like 2 years ago, I got COVID brain. I got the fog.
As you know, I tweeted out that the jet lag absolutely and completely sucks last night at 7:11 Pacific time. And it took 9 minutes for Eric Stone Street to see that and take such pity on me that he said, kind of like an AFC team you pick to win their division.
In 92, the Colts had the 1-2 pick. About as close as I can find it.
Colts had both picks?
Yeah, they took Steve Entman and Quentin Coriot.
Oh, yeah, I remember
in 92.
Remember that one?
Oh, I do remember that.
Jalen Hyatt of Tennessee and Luis Guzman coming up.
Steve Entman.
It could be information to change your life forever. Or the Something You Should Know podcast could just be something interesting.
Ramit Sethi, talking about being rich.
The old definition of rich had a lot to do with how much money you accumulated, but it wasn't about how to spend it. It was more about how to get it. But okay, so once you get it, what do you do with it?
In our culture, everybody tells you how to save, but nobody teaches you how to spend it.
Something You Should Know, wherever you listen.